League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Their forwards really started to dominate us on the boards. So we got out-rebounded by 11, and that stretch, Tolliver, Caspi, Gay, they were all over the glass on us. We didn't do a good job. And then we just didn't close again on three-point shots. I think it was a little bit like the Charlotte game. You know, we get the lead, and okay, well, it's only 1-3. I don't need to close on that one. And then all of a sudden, they're rolling, and it's tough to stop. So I thought, you know, we really let up when we got the lead instead of closing it out, and we clearly didn't learn anything from the Charlotte game.
Yeah, it was a few long rebounds starting off the third quarter. Bron going by his free, and then two turnovers that kind of limits us from extending that lease. There were some costly mistakes on my end, a few missed shots that I take full responsibility for. Just got to be better and realizing, you know, being aggressive the whole entire game is what makes us great. Going forward, just learning from this game and just see where we can get better, especially on the defensive end.
I feel like I haven't played since New Year's Day. Tough game for us overall. Personally, I haven't had a practice or a shoot run or anything yet with the team. So just kind of trying to figure out what I was doing out there. Obviously, a lot to learn. We have a lot to get better at, and that's exciting.
I think first I just need to know where I'm supposed to be. I got a lot of old habits from the Hawks in my head, and got to learn a new system. Got another game tomorrow. Try to get better.
43's up in the first half. In our coverage, we're blitzing them and forcing them to make a decision. And when they're making threes, it's definitely tough. But we got to be ready to play from the beginning of the game. First half, I don't think we played tough enough and played very passive. Third quarter. We turned it up a little bit, but sometimes that's too late.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome indeed to the Extravaganza Radio on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo Sports Leader. Thanks for joining us this afternoon for a couple of hours of fun, exciting and scintillating sports talk. Although it wasn't a whole lot of exciting or scintillating last night. When it comes to the NBA teams that we hold most close to our hearts, really bad night overall. If you look at the West Coast trips that the teams are on right now, Cavaliers out in Utah not getting anything done, and the Pistons not happy after blowing an 18-point lead. You just heard that from Stan Van Gundy at least a little bit. Just a major collapse, the kind of thing that they cannot afford to do if they're trying to take those giant steps forward that everybody thought they would make or take after they made the playoffs last year. So we're going to talk a little basketball. Excuse me. Coming up, we're going to talk a little bit with Rick Noland at about 3:35 or so, 3:40, maybe somewhere in that neighborhood. We're going to talk about the debut of Kyle Korver, underwhelming as it was. Cavaliers simply did not give LeBron James enough help in this one. LeBron James in the second half yesterday in the loss to Utah, and they fell behind pretty big early, and they narrowed it down quite a bit thanks to James. But just to give you an idea, LeBron James scored 19 in the second half yesterday. All others on the Cavaliers scored 32 in that half. LeBron shot 54%. Everybody else shot 32%. LeBron was 3 of 6 from 3. Everybody else was 3 of 13 for 3. He outscored his teammates 13 to 12 in the third quarter. Not a good night for the supporting cast for LeBron James. And that certainly is something they cannot afford to do as they play some of the Western Conference teams. We all expect the Western Conference to be the Golden State Warriors conference to lose. And nobody expects that they're going to have to deal with the Utah Jazz in the NBA Finals. But you go out west, you want to have a good showing against the teams that the Warriors are playing on a regular basis. This is one of those psychological things, I believe, where, you're not necessarily trying to prove a point against any one team, but you are trying to prove a point to the team that you expect to be the Western Conference champion, and that is, hey, you guys play against these guys on a regular basis. We don't. The East from top to bottom is not necessarily a stronger conference. So when we come out west, we want to show that we are just as good as you by beating all of the same teams that you beat on a regular basis. And those kinds of things, well, they're not going to happen when they play the way they did last night. The flip side of that, though, if you will, is that it is, and let me ask you, Jim Cushlin, as we get started right here on the extravaganza, is it any kind of an excuse, or is there any kind of justification by saying that, you know, there was a new wrinkle in this whole thing? Kyle Korver's presence, you know, kind of matters in this thing. Even though he's not necessarily going to be the starter and he's going to play a ton of minutes at the outset, he's got to learn a new system as to how his new teammates play, and his new teammates have to adjust to him. There is going to be a bit of a learning curve there, yes?
Yeah, there definitely will be, and you kind of heard just now in the montage Kyle Korver saying that he's still got a lot of Atlanta habits right now in his head that he's got to obviously work out a little bit. But
I'm talking about them to him, not just him
right,
to them.
Right. No, and that's on the flip side, when you're talking about the rest of the Cavs with Korver, it's, you know, got to find him when he's open, which he should be a lot, as is the case with a lot of the guys for the Cavs that are not amongst the big three. They're going to have the open shots. It's about getting timing down, and those things are going to take a couple games. Again, as he also mentioned in that montage, due to the delaying, thank you, Mike Dunleavy, for getting the deal fully finalized. As he said, he hasn't even had a shoot around or practice session with the Cavs. Right. Literally the first time he's played with them was on the court yesterday in Utah.
Yeah, that's a very good point, and certainly there will be time in between games. Not now though, of course, because they got a back to back. They got to be in Portland tonight for a matchup against the Blazers. But there will be time, obviously, for Tyronn Lue to work him into their rotation and figure out exactly what it's going to take to make him comfortable and ready, et cetera, to be at the peak performance level that he can be. And again, nobody really expects him to be. We talked about this before, what he was 2 years ago when he was a 50-plus percent shooter from three and an all-star, but they expect him to be a significant upgrade over what they have had, obviously, especially with J.R. Smith down. And quite frankly, even when J.R. Smith was up, because he was not off to a good start this season after signing his big contract. Let's shift gears a little bit, because we're going to talk more Cavs later on, and talk a little bit about the Pistons. And again, we talk about a blown lead, an 18-point lead. The Pistons in Sacramento lose to the Kings. Not exactly a juggernaut by anybody's description of that franchise. But the Kings, who are 16-22 now after that win and just 8-10 at home, did indeed come back and put one on Stan Van Gundy and his boys. And once again, you know, there are a lot of things to point to here, Jim, as far as the problems of the Pistons. But the fourth quarter defense, they give up 32 points in the fourth quarter to Sacramento. You know, it's one thing, you know, to not have all of your offensive game, et cetera, when you need it in clutch time, but your defense is an effort thing. We talk about this. You might be missing shots, you might not have your rhythm, but your defense is an all-the-time thing. Well, they played relatively decent defense for three quarters, giving up 21, 22, and 25 points. 32 in the fourth, though, while scoring only 17. That, of course, was the difference in the game. They weren't able to stop Sacramento, which, again, you know, is not... DeMarcus Cousins is one of the best players in the league, yes, but they don't have a ton of big time scorers on that Sacramento roster.
No, they don't, and that's part of the reason for, you know, you keep hearing random rumors that they may or may not. I mean, Sacramento's still kind of a giant mess, though. That bottom of the West right now is bad enough that, if I'm not mistaken, they hold the eighth playoff spot as of this moment. Yeah, no, they're tied with the Blazers for that eighth spot, but they're
six games under 500.
Yep. So it's technically a playoff team right now, but they're still overall a giant mess of a franchise. And even though Cousins is one of the more outstanding players in the league, despite his, let's call him, issues, you can't have that kind of performance in a fourth quarter situation like that. You just can't, even if it's one of those West Coast road games.
Yeah, you really can't, you really shouldn't, and especially for a team that, again, has a really good defense statistically speaking overall.
Right.
But in recent games, in this, you know, bad stretch of basketball they've been in for, you know, the better part of a month now, you know, their defense has been the problem. They're stopping no one at crunch time, and they're stopping no one really at any time, but especially when it's, you know, quote unquote winning time in the fourth quarter. And that's a big issue, obviously, because they may or may not have everything that they want on the offensive end. Yep. They might not have everybody clicking on all cylinders. Stan Van Gundy might be still mixing up some lineups and taking some liberties with starting different guys. But defense, again, to me, and I've always been a longtime proponent of defense is not, and I'm going to borrow and paraphrase Vince Lombardi when he said winning is not a sometime thing, it's an all-the-time thing. Defense in the NBA should be an all-the-time thing because your defensive intensity doesn't go into a slump. Your shooting stroke might.
Right.
You know, your rhythm offensively might. That's sure. Just part of the game. But defense is about hustle and intensity, and it should never slump.
No, it shouldn't, Dan. It clearly has, even in some of their wins recently, because before last night, for what it's worth, they had won 3 out of 4 since the calendar changed in January. But even in that, you give up 114 to Charlotte in a game you barely win. Even though it went to double overtime, 124 to Portland, and these defensive issues, well, it's not going to get any easier after an off day today. They got a back-to-back in Golden State at Oracle. And then at Utah, and well, Cavs fans, if you stayed up late last night, you saw what Utah's still capable of.
Yeah, no question about it. Certainly the Cavaliers did, and we're going to talk more about that with Rick Nolan coming up in a bit, talk about the Kyle Korver fit. Want to shift to college basketball. It's kind of interesting as we get started today. We're everything but football because we were so football heavy on Friday leading into the wild card matchups for the NFL. We were so heavy on college football Friday as well because of the national championship game that we saw last night or 2 nights ago now with Clemson beating Alabama. And then kind of yesterday the same thing and Monday as well. So today we're kind of getting into some different stories and different sports, not only professional basketball, but let's talk about the college game insofar as, once again, the latest controversy surrounding Duke's Grayson Allen. Jim, did you see the play yet?
Yes. I've found the video. I've watched it a couple times now.
I put it up. It is on our Facebook page right now. It is not on our Twitter feed yet, but follow us on Twitter and Facebook, and you will see it. On Facebook, it is 106.5 The Ticket. On Twitter, which, again, it's not up yet, but it will be, it's Sports Radio 106.5. What happened was Duke's Grayson Allen was trying to make a save when the ball, a loose ball, found its way careening toward the Florida State bench. Grayson Allen, being what, you know, a lot of Duke players are, willing to go to the deck, willing to go into this crowd, willing to go into chairs, et cetera, trying to make a save, did so. Well, and I don't want to just say only Duke players, but, you know, that's kind of what they're known for. They're floor slapping, in your face defense and full hustle. And you know, we're going to leave it all out on the court, that kind of thing. In his third game back, since his one game suspension for tripping opponents, his third such incident in 10 months, he went over to the Florida State bench at top speed, dove out of bounds to try to slap the ball back in to save it for his team. And as he was falling out of bounds, as he was, you know, coming down from his leap, if you will.
Okay.
He found himself over the top of some chairs and some people. And one such person was the assistant coach at Florida State, Dennis Gates. Now, usually, people on the sideline, and I've been on plenty of sidelines for professional sporting games, none of which, of course, are as bad as on the NFL, because you've seen NFL sideline guys get trucked all the time. You know, a pass coming their way, and they're not paying attention, or they're just not fast enough to react, or whatever the case might be. You know, guys run out of bounds. Guys get trucked all the time. But generally speaking, if you see somebody coming at you, you are either going to part ways like the Red Sea, everybody separate and let him land, or you're going to brace yourself to either hold him up and catch him, or, well, maybe it's either way, to either hold him up or catch him. Either way, you're getting out of the way or you're doing something. One thing you're not doing is just kind of standing there, arms folded, and whatever happens, happens. Well, that's kind of what happened here. Grayson Allen dove out of bounds, and as he dove out of bounds for that, you know, slap back in to try to save the ball, he landed on some people and up against Florida State assistant coach Dennis Gates. Now, he didn't hit Gates with his shoulder as he fell out of bounds. He went ahead and squared up as he was in the air and falling down and squared up his hands and gave a two-handed shove, it seemed, to Dennis Gates' chest. You can see this right now on our Facebook page. Twitter, social media, fans, players, everywhere, killing Grayson Allen. Oh, my God, this dude is out of control. He just shoved Dennis Gates. He just shoved the Florida State assistant coach. Intentionally. He's out of control. He's out of his mind. He's a cheap shot artist, et cetera, et cetera. He needs to be resuspended. And you know what? They'd be right. I don't know what to make of it as I watch it. I'm trying to think, well, is he putting his hands on the chest of Gates to stop himself from falling? Was he using him as like a wall, like, whoa, 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 hold me up kind of a thing? Or was it aggressive and borderline bipolar, a move of get the hell out of my way as I'm falling, a two-handed shove that was intended with malice? That's essentially, you know, those are essentially the two choices here. Watch that play on our Facebook page and soon on our Twitter feed and decide for yourself. But while you're deciding for yourself, and I think the best image of this came from somebody who tweeted the short 11-second GIF out, somebody named Atlanta Sports Guy, who tweeted out great this GIF, and Grayson Allen has serious issues, anger issues, kind of things that lead him to trip people, and in this case, push somebody. That's his take. But take a look at it and see for yourself. Watch it, and then we'll talk about your take, and we'll talk about my take. And here's where I am right now. I think it looked like a pretty doggone passive-aggressive play. He was trying to save the ball, and when he was landing and realized he was landing on the opponents, he gave them a shove that was not meant with good intentions. Probably not meant to injure or hurt, but just a, you know, I'm landing on you right now, get out of my way. Kind of a thing like that. That's how it appeared to me. However, I am also willing to defer to the opinion of the individuals involved, especially the individual who was shoved. And the Florida State assistant coach is playing it very, very cool. He actually not only did he not come down on Grayson Allen, the Duke guard, he actually defended him and said, no, you all don't understand what you just saw. This is pretty amazing. Assistant coach Dennis Gates, after being shoved in the chest by Grayson Allen, who dove into the FSU bench for a loose ball, said the following. He responded, actually, to the backlash, posting. He didn't say this. He posted this message, and he did so on Twitter. It's much more than 140 characters. He typed it out and then took a snap of it and made that his statement on Twitter. And this is what he tweeted. Specifically taking a large part of the blame for himself because he did not move out of the way, and he referred to Grayson Allen's dive and his shove as a great hustle play. Listen to what the coach involved said. Quote, I clearly need to do a better job of moving out of the way like my coworkers. It is my responsibility to do one of two things. The first is getting out of the way. The second, be a good sport by making an attempt to protect an opponent's blind spot. I clearly did not make the correct decision. I misread Grayson Allen's speed the way you are all misreading the clip. He said it was our lower bodies that made the most contact. The results from that impact is what put me on my back, not a shove. I did not in any way feel attacked nor disrespected as the media and others are portraying Grayson Allen's character and hustle. Stop judging on hand placement, he writes. All I view it to be is a great hustle play. Nothing more, nothing less. Watch the lower body collision, he writes, not upper. I know what a dirty play is, and I was not the victim of one. Thanks to all the Seminole fans who came out and made the atmosphere electric, the tuck was rocking. You all made the difference. Go Noles. That's it. That's what we got from Dennis Gates. He sent that as a tweet, and his headline for the tweet was, I want to make this very clear, with an exclamation point and a hashtag, give Grayson a break. And he tagged into that tweet ESPN, TD Online, War Chant, which is one of the Seminoles' web and blog pages, as well as Knowles 24/7. He also tagged in Grayson J. Allen and Duke men's basketball, Duke MBB. So that is an unbelievably gracious move by a guy that a lot of people felt like he was attacked. Felt like he was two-handed shoved to the chest out of a sign of disrespect or the enemy or whatever the case might be. He is saying no. He said it was my job to get out of his way. I didn't, and our lower bodies are what contacted one another as he fell, and that's what knocked me down. Not any kind of a shove, and it was not disrespectful to me at all. This was with about five and a half minutes remaining in the game. Allen ended up getting a head injury on the dive, ending his night. So that probably was the best case scenario for Jeff Capel, the interim or fill-in or whatever you want to call it, temporary Duke coach. Probably the best situation, because Capel then didn't have to decide whether or not he wanted to take Grayson Allen out and decide guilt or innocence or intent on that play at that time. He didn't want to have to do that, and obviously the head injury made it possible for him to just kind of say whatever happened. He's out now because he's hurt. So Allen finished the night with 9 points, 5 assists, 3 rebounds. The Seminoles, by the way, ninth in the nation at 16-1, knocked off Duke in the game. If anybody was cared about the actual outcome of the game, it was a Florida State win. The Blue Devils are in a bit of a state of flux, I think, and they may be for a little while without Coach Mike Krzyzewski. But when Dennis Gates says this was not personal, this was not an attack, this was not something that was cheap, it was not something that was with malice aforethought, this was a great hustle play, that should be a statement that somebody cares about. That's something that people should consider when they decide how they feel about Grayson Allen and Duke. However, when it comes to the win over Florida State, or excuse me, by Florida State over Duke, Coach Gates, the assistant coach, and the entire Florida State program was just thrilled. And they said that is exactly what has to happen. This one was personal, talking about winning the game. Ever since he did that, I've been waiting a long time to see him again. The second person that Allen had tripped last season. Florida State's sharpshooting guard, Xavier Rathan Mays. He was the second guy to be tripped by Grayson Allen in this little magical mystery tour of tangled feet that Allen has created for himself. He scored 21 last night. He's the one who said this was personal. Ever since he did that, I've been waiting a long time to see him again, and it was good to finally get him again. He said, Grayson Allen is the head of the snake. Where he goes, they go. I wanted to frustrate him and make him second guess and kick-started our offense. Kick-started, he said. That's right. So he kick-started, of course, not being, what do I want to say there? I think it was pun intended, to be quite honest with you. Kick-started with respect to Grayson Allen. But it wasn't his feet. It was at this time his two-handed shove of Coach Dennis Gates, the assistant coach, that drew the ire of Twitter and basketball aficionados everywhere who say he needs to be suspended again. Kushlin, you said you saw it.
Yep.
So what did you see? Does he need to be suspended again?
I'm not so sure. I really would like to believe a lot that in the very gracious comments you read from the Florida State assistant coach. The reason we're having this discussion in some ways, though, is because bad reputations tend to follow you, right? In most other guys, we probably wouldn't even think of it, and we would just shrug it off as...
You forfeit the benefit of the doubt.
Exact. Thank you. You summed it up better than I was trying to just there. You forfeited the benefit of the doubt, Grayson Allen, because of your past instances where we know you were doing things for possible harm. Maybe this was, maybe this wasn't. But because it's you, we have to ask that question.
It is a very fair question, and I don't know what the answer is going to be. Mike Krzyzewski is not coaching this team right now. Does that mean he can't? And when does he go into surgery, or did he go in already?
Did
he have his back surgery? Wasn't it Friday?
He made that decision on Thursday. Yeah, he had the surgery the next day or two. He's obviously going to be out until sometime February.
Yeah, obviously. Okay, there you go. So, but the point is, so I guess technically as he recovers, if he's watching TV or getting reports on this, he could, you know, make a statement from the hospital bed to his team if he wanted. But I think when he stepped aside because of this medical condition, he turned it over to Jeff Capel, and Jeff Capel is running it. That means he gets to make all of the decisions.
And that's kind of my understanding of it as well.
That's probably how it should be. If you're the interim coach or the temporary coach or whatever it is you want to call it, fill in while the guy is sick coach, whatever it is, you still want to have the authority and the autonomy to do what you think is right. But I can't imagine Jeff Capel, even if he thinks it's right, suspending Grayson Allen for a situation like this, even without the benefit of the doubt that you talk about, Jim, because he has forfeited that, without Mike Krzyzewski's say-so. And it appears that Mike Krzyzewski has already made his mind up that Grayson Allen has learned a lesson from his original banishment, which was only one game long, but was 13 days long, as well as the stripping of his captaincy. So I don't think Jeff Capel is going to do anything here, which means Grayson Allen essentially has, without having the benefit of the doubt, based on his various adventures with opponents, he might not have the benefit of the doubt, but he's going to have the green light to pretty much do what he wants.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the case, and I think you just summed it up very nicely to those who today want Grayson Allen to be suspended. Bob just kind of explained to you why it probably won't happen, even if it should, and because I don't think he's going to get suspended over this.
I don't either. Not with Jeff Capel at the helm. I really don't. I think Coach K might have a different type of way of explaining this to the public, and he may do it again, but I can't imagine Capel doing it without Krzyzewski's green light, and Krzyzewski is not going to green light that suspension from a hospital bed.
Right.
I just don't think so. All right, let me get a quick timeout here. I want to talk more about that as we continue, but want to stay with the NBA, too. We're going to talk to Rick Nolan. Kyle Korver made his debut for the Cavaliers from the Atlanta Hawks. Mike Dunleavy continues his tour of the Central because he goes from the Bulls to the Cavaliers and now to the Hawks. So it's kind of interesting how these guys are moving around within the division, but we're going to talk about that coming up as we continue with Rick Nolan, who covers the Cleveland Cavaliers. NBA continuing right after this on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Back indeed, staying with basketball discussions, going to talk NBA with Rick Nolan coming up in a moment. But first, let's shine the spotlight on the young kids doing their great work on the court or the mat or the field or wherever it is they might be. Time for the KeyBank High School Athletes of the Week for the girls. Abby Cantrell of Gibsonburg. Basketball led all scorers with 21 points, including 6 threes in the Golden Bears' 48-41 win over Emmanuel Christian on Saturday. Even with the win, Gibsonburg struggling a bit at 5-6 overall, 2-5 in tack play. For the boys, Ben Pacer of Maumee basketball. Pacer had only 12 points in the overtime win on Friday over Springfield, and all his points were beyond the arc. But two of his threes were gigantic. One was knocked down as time expired to force OT, and then with 2.5 seconds left in overtime, he won it. So Ben Pacer and Abby Cantrell, your KeyBank High School Athletes of the Week. If you have a nomination for High School Athlete of the Week, whether it be wrestling or swimming, what else goes on in the winter? Basketball? Trying to think of the other.
There's hockey in this
area,
of course, yes.
No matter what you've got going on, if you've got a nominee that is deserving of recognition right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, send your nomination to
athlete at 106.5theticket.com.
And we will give great consideration for on-air mentions. All right, Rick Nolan is the longtime NBA beat writer covering the Cleveland Cavaliers. Back to talk a little bit about the NBA with us. I think for the first time in 2017... Yeah, we reached out to Rick last week. He had a tight schedule. We couldn't get him. So this is the first time, and I guess that means it's still okay to say Happy New Year, Rick Nolan.
Happy New Year.
Good to talk to you, sir. I appreciate getting you on. I can't believe it's already the 11th day of January, and we haven't spoken yet. So we're good to get you. It's good to get you back on the air, especially as we talk about what's going on with the team that you cover and its new sharpshooter, who wasn't especially sharp in his debut last night, Kyle Korver. First of all, what was your impression of the deal when it was announced toward the end of last week that Kyle Korver was coming to Cleveland?
I thought it would help. I cautioned, though, that any time you get a 35, 36-year-old perimeter player, that oftentimes you're not getting quite the player you think you are, and the hope is that he still is in the Richard Jefferson stage of his career and not leaning more to the Mike Miller, Sean Marion, Mike Dunleavy, Chris Bergman, Anderson portion of it. And time will tell. I think he's still got some juice in the tank. I certainly think he has to be better than Mike Dunleavy was for however many games. He did virtually nothing here. So time will tell. I honestly, Bob, I hope they end up starting him. I quite frankly do not get the infatuation at all with DeAndre Liggins. His offensive game assaults my senses, and I don't want to watch it anymore. He is so bad that if he gives up 2 points, they have lost to that matchup because he simply cannot score.
So you want to see Korver start?
JR could start for this team and he's hurt, why can't Kyle Korver start for this team?
Let's consider that for a moment. When J.R. Smith was starting for this team, though, we know that he was a great sharp shooter, but he had cold spells as well. The one thing, though, that he did well, though, at least in my view, was he was a pretty good on-the-ball defender. Is Korver going to be able to stop anybody for a significant period of time on the defensive side if his shot isn't there the way sometimes it wasn't with J.R. while he was healthy?
Solid point. I think everything they do is designed, how does this match up with one Golden State Warriors team, in June? And, that's also something I warn people of is just who exactly is Kyle Korver going to guard, on Golden State's team? And I don't know that there's an answer to that. He's going to have to provide firepower. He's going to have to shoot through his defensive liabilities. He's not the worst player. He's a smart position player who knows his limitations athletically. And I think it's going to have to be a team role with him defensively. I don't think you're going to just put him on a guy and say, here, stop him. He's not that player. But,
I'm looking also, Rick, as you consider about whether or not he should start, or you have already said because of the Liggins belief that you have, and I don't disagree. He's nothing offensively, but how many minutes?
The idea is JR is going to come. The idea is JR is going to be back as well.
Right,
so,
but not until what? 4 months? We're still 4 months.
Middle of March to end of March.
Okay.
But I think. In an ideal world, they both play at that position. I don't think Kyle Korver suddenly just stops playing completely because JR returns to health, and you already have Shumpert there. It's hard for me to believe that DeAndre Liggins is going to have anything to do with whether this team wins or loses in April, May, and June.
Okay, we're talking to Rick Noland, who is the beat writer covering the Cleveland Cavaliers. We're going to talk about a lot of NBA issues, but staying on this for now. First of all, what do you think it was with Mike Dunleavy? Did he show signs last year with Chicago that he was nearing the end, that he was going to virtually have nothing left in 2017 or 16-17? Or was this a stunner that he came in and just could do nothing, could not make anything, couldn't even really get off of the bench? I mean, did we know this was coming?
That's a great question because, we knew he had back issues, but we also knew that when he was healthy, he was still a guy who moved very effectively without the ball. And could put points up in bunches and then had a number of great games against the Cavaliers.
Yeah.
And that's, Kyle Korver is a similar player who excels at being able to move without the ball and run off screens, catch the ball on the move, immediately square his feet and get a shot up. The Cavs have not shown yet that they can utilize a player like that because their three-point shooters, the vast, vast, vast majority of the time, are either big men who pick or you go stand over there in the corner and shoot it when we pass it to you.
Like Channing Frye.
Correct. And that's not what Kyle Korver or Mike Dunleavy have been their entire career. They've been movers without the ball. And then get the ball at the right time and shoot it immediately without dribbling. So To answer your question about Dunleavy, I think it was a combination of things. Part of me just looked to me like he lost his zest for playing, and wasn't having a whole lot of fun here, as hard as that may seem to believe. You would think that a shooter would thrive playing with the Cleveland Cavaliers because you get a lot of open shots.
Exactly.
He never seemed comfortable. He never really seemed like he was confident on the floor. Hopefully the Korver thing works better.
That was the reason for my asking Rick Noland about Dunleavy is to say, how do we know? Because we kind of assumed. I didn't think he was near the end of the line as he appeared to be here when we saw him last year. And I don't think that about Kyle Korver, but yet he didn't fit. Talking about Dunleavy, he did not fit here. Maybe the reason why is the style of play that you're talking about, a mover, a guy who likes to find his way to the open shot rather than just stand there and let everybody else break down defenses until they kick it to you. I'm wondering if you aren't going to see a repeat of that with Kyle Korver. My belief, my hope,
well,
is that he's not going to be like that, that he'll be able to adjust. But, you know, we don't know, I guess.
And that's why I, you know, people love them some trades because the new guy is always the good guy until he gets here and you see that maybe he's not quite the player you thought you were getting. So that's what I was saying when I went back to, you know, is he still Richard Jefferson with a lot left in the tank, or is he Mike Miller, Sean Marion, James Jones, Chris Anderson, who really... There's a reason Atlanta wanted to get rid of him so badly. Maybe they see it coming. Now, I don't think that's the case. If he does nothing but stand in the corner and make 50% of his three-pointers, which statistically he has done, then he can still help them in that role alone. But I think they should want to get more out of him than they ever were going to get from very early on out of Mike Dunleavy. He's got to fill a bigger role than Mike Dunleavy had filled. He's got to be a starter if needed until JR gets back here and a decent role piece scoring-wise off the bench in the playoffs. Otherwise, you can't play him.
We're talking to Rick Noland, who covers the NBA, specifically the Cleveland Cavaliers out in Cleveland, talking about the addition of Kyle Korver, his debut last night. He shot 1 of 5. He did not, he had 2 points, played 18 minutes, did not make a 3-point shot. Obviously, it's going to be a work in progress. Remember, they haven't even practiced together yet, too.
Correct.
He just kind of jumped
Correct.
Out there on the road, and he'll do the same thing tonight without any practice, you know, and actually a full practice tonight as they go to Portland in a back-to-back. So it'll be interesting to see how they use him tonight and whether or not he starts to become a little bit more comfortable. A couple of other stories, storylines, if you could, Rick Noland, as we talk about the NBA. The Isaiah Thomas story is an amazing one. You know, we're always looking to see who is going to be the challenger for the Cavaliers in the East, if there is to be one. Is it going to be the Toronto Raptors once again, you know, making it to the NBA Eastern Conference Finals? And as we look at this Boston Celtics team and we try to find that next rival, I'm just continue to be amazed at 5'9" Isaiah Thomas, who is playing as well as maybe, and I got to be careful, I'm saying this surrounded by a lot of Pistons fans here in Northwest Ohio, but almost as well as his namesake did at his best, there's never been a 5'9" guy. I mean, we've seen 5'7" Spud Webb, we've seen 5'3" Muggsy Bogues, what's Nate Robinson, like 5'6", 5'7", 5'8"? We've never seen a guy average 28 points a game and actually be almost a franchise player, which is what he has become. And I'll tell you what, the Celtics are very, very close to being a very, very dangerous team in the Eastern Conference. Would you agree?
I do. In fact, at the beginning of the year, that is the team I predicted the Cavs to beat in the conference finals, not Toronto. I like their team. Still don't have that guy outside of Isaiah that they can turn to down the stretch of games, but he has been extremely, extremely good. I love his game. He is so strong in such a small package, but he can just separate even from bigger players, and get to the rim and finish. They're well coached. They share the ball. They seem to like one another a lot, enjoy playing together. They listen to their coach. Pressure on them is not going to be that great. They went around, and then they're kind of their season's been a success, and they can play a little bit free and easy, and maybe you win a second round and even get into a conference final series like I think they have a chance to. But I like them, and there's no other team in the East that you can point to and say this team has a decidedly better chance to be the second team in the conference finals against Cleveland. So, until proven otherwise, I think they have a chance of getting there.
Yeah, and Toronto still right now, as of now, 38 games into the 82-game season, they're still second in the East at 25-13, only because, they have played the same amount of games. Boston is 23-15. And DeRozan is one of the top 2-3 scorers in the league this year.
Yeah.
They're still a very dangerous team. But I see some things with Boston, and they may be a trade away. Who knows? Like you said, everybody gets trade happy. They may be a trade away in adding one more guy to really, really, really being a dangerous team. I want to look overall, in including the West on this one, there are only four teams left in the NBA right now, Rick Nolan, with single-digit losses. The Warriors are 33-6. The Spurs are 30-8, and the Cavaliers are 28-9. The fourth one is the one that nobody is really thinking about because they're out West, and they are going to be swamped, at least attention-wise, by the aforementioned Warriors and Spurs. But the Houston Rockets are 31-9.
Yes. The biggest surprise in the league.
What D'Antoni is doing to me is an amazing thing, and what he's getting and helping turn James Harden into is an amazing thing as well. What I want to know is this just, I don't want to say fluky, that's very insulting, but is this a team that can do this for the long haul and be one of the three threats really to come out of the West?
My hunch and initial reaction is no. Daryl Morey, their general manager, he's a graduate of Highland High School out here in Medina County. He'll make a million trades, until he gets it. And then when it goes bad, he'll make another one, and they'll keep doing it and pushing buttons. And they at least keep their fans entertained with new players, and they have played phenomenally well. Harden, outside of Westbrook, probably your 1-2 MVP candidates. My gut instinct is that they can't win that way against top-tier teams when you're playing a best-of-seven series, and matchups and preparation take on increased importance. I think teams will be able to defend them better when they play them night after night after night. I also think that some of their defensive shortcomings will be exposed.
And,
so,
and there are a lot of them. I mean, just judging by the points scored and points allowed, they're scoring a league-high 114 points a game, but they're giving up one of the highest amounts at 107. Now, you could just say that shows they don't have a great defense, but it also means they play such an up-tempo style, getting so many shots up, it leads to a lot of shots coming the other direction as well. And so you're giving up a lot of points.
I actually think Utah will be a better playoff team than Houston. I would be shocked if the Rockets won more than one playoff series. And I will not be shocked if they lose in the first round.
Wow.
I just don't believe in them. I've never believed in them for this entire reign of Daryl Morey there. And I haven't been wrong yet. So they're going to have to prove me wrong.
They haven't been 31-9 yet. They haven't been
But they've had some pretty good teams at this point early on, too, and it's just got exposed for what it was as the season has progressed.
You mentioned Harden and Westbrook as 1-2 in the MVP, maybe, and they had a great showdown a few nights ago as Westbrook had 49. Harden had nearly a triple-double, and Harden won, ironically enough, at the end by making a great pass as he gave the ball to Nene, who got fouled and hit the two game-winning free throws. That was a great showdown between the top two.
Yes.
My question is, who is one and who is two, and are either of them over The King sitting in Cleveland and still doing his thing, steady as she goes, 26 points, 8.5 assists and about 7.5 rebounds.
Yeah, if I had to vote right now, I would vote Westbrook 1, Harden 2, and LeBron 3, and that's, I would take LeBron first if I had to just put somebody on my team, but for what those guys do every night for their team, and they have to do it, I'd have to pick that, give them a slight advantage. And, you know, LeBron is LeBron. He's arguably the best player of all time, or at least in that discussion with a handful of other guys. But
these seasons that those two guys are having are just...
Exactly.
And LeBron, do you think either one of them will finish with the, you know, with the triple-double average?
I think the longer the season goes on, the better a chance that Westbrook will do it. The rebounds are going to be, the rebounds are the hardest thing, and you're going to have to build some cushion. Because I think, you know, once you've played 30, 40 games, once you fall below 10 there, it's going to be really hard to get that decline.
Yeah, I agree. And to me, the fatigue factor is, it has to set in. When you play the game the way Westbrook especially does, I think Harden plays it obviously at a very high pace and fast pace as well, but a little bit differently. Westbrook to me is the Tasmanian devil on the basketball court. He plays
exactly.
The game like a moving tornado, just flying around here, there, and it's like bing, bang, boom, off of this guy, here's an assist, here's a rebound. And as a great and finely condition of an athlete as he is, Rick, I just feel like at some point the legs got to go. At some point, the loose ball rebounds you can chase down that count to your total you don't get to, and those kind of things. I just don't know if in today's NBA somebody who plays that hard, that fast, 42 minutes a night or whatever he's playing, I just don't know if he's got the juice to do it for 82.
Agree, because neither one of those guys, they're not putting up the old Jason Kidd, you know, 12, 11, and 10
right,
triple-double.
Right.
They're putting up the 35, 13, and 12 triple-doubles, where they're doing the bulk of the scoring, too. It's not like they're like, okay, I'm going to go get the 10 rebounds, and then I'll get the points whenever I need them and just barely crawl over into triple-double range. They're carrying their teams from the beginning of games till the end of games on many nights, and that's a tremendous load to carry, and it's a luxury that LeBron has that he doesn't have to do that. He can choose his spots and take over for stretches,
right,
rather than just have to completely put his presence on the game from the opening tip till the final buzzer. He can turn it over to other guys and decide when he wants to step on the glass. Those two players, they don't have that luxury.
And I stand corrected, by the way. He's playing 39 minutes a game right now. No, correction. Hold on a second. What am I saying? It's games played is 39. Hold on a second.
Westbrook
is only playing 35 minutes a game. 34.6 minutes a game. That's far fewer than I thought.
Yeah, but if you look at the 35 minutes that Russell Westbrook plays... He plays about 137 miles an hour.
Yes, he does. That's that Tasmanian devil look that I talk about.
Yeah.
But that is better, though. He's sitting 13 minutes out of 48 a night, roughly, and maybe that is a difference maker, and we'll see as they get into the second half, and they're a team that's maybe fighting for one of the top four spots to get a home playoff series, that sort of thing, you know, if those minutes go up. And as those minutes go up, the stats go up, but also the fatigue factor starts to set in there, too. So we'll see whether that happens. Really great to watch, though. It's a lot of fun theater for the NBA in 2016-17. Rick Nolan, Rick, always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you so much for making the time. We appreciate it. We look forward to catching up again real soon.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Have a great one, bud. There you go. Rick Nolan joining us talking NBA. It's 4:02. That means we're a little bit late for SportsCenter. Let's get there now, and let's get some of your calls going on the other side of that right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket.
The
their forwards really started to dominate us on the boards. So we got out-rebounded by 11, and that stretch, Tolliver, Caspi, Gay, they were all over the glass on us. We didn't do a good job. And then we just didn't close again on three-point shots. I think it was a little bit like the Charlotte game. You know, we get the lead, and okay, well, it's only 1-3. I don't need to close on that one. And I don't need to, and then all of a sudden, they're rolling, and it's tough to stop. So I thought, you know, we really let up when we got the lead instead of closing it out, and we clearly didn't learn anything from the Charlotte game.
Yeah, there's a few long rebounds starting off the third quarter. Bond going by his free, and then two turnovers that kind of limits us from extending that lead. There were some costly mistakes on my end, a few missed shots that I take full responsibility for. Just got to be better and realizing, you know, being aggressive the whole entire game is what makes us great. Going forward, just learning from this game and just see where we can get better, especially on the defensive end.
I feel like I hadn't played since New Year's Day. Tough game for us overall. Personally, I haven't had a practice or a shoot-around or anything yet with the team. So I was kind of trying to figure out what I was doing out there. Obviously, a lot to learn. We have a lot to get better at, and that's exciting.
I think first I just need to know where I'm supposed to be. I got a lot of old habits from the Hawks in my head, and you know, got to learn a new system. Got another game tomorrow. Try to get better.
43's up in the first half. You know, in our coverage, we're blitzing them and forcing them to make a decision. And when they're making threes, you know, it's definitely tough. But we got to be ready to play from the beginning of the game. You know, first half, I don't think we played tough enough and played very passive. Third quarter, we turned it up a little bit, but, you know, sometimes that's too late.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And onward we roll now at 12 minutes after 4 o'clock. Thanks for joining us on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo Sports Leader. Phone lines open now at 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. Thanks again to Rick Nolan for talking about NBA stuff, especially as it pertains to Cleveland Cavaliers, the defending NBA champions, who are friends from the East. But I want to start this hour, and maybe spend this hour, talking about our friends to the north and the northwest of where we sit right now. Jim Kushlin, really interesting story today by Brian Manzullo of the Detroit Free Press, online at freep.com. And I don't know if we tweeted it or not, but we should. Let's get that out on our Twitter feed. Let's get that on our Facebook page as well so that people can see what we're talking about. But Jim, when the headline is, or excuse me, not the headline, when the first line in the body of the story is, if you're in a good mood, hit the back button now. That does not bode well for what is to come in the article. The theme of the article is detailed in the headline. We are in the worst Detroit sports championship slump in decades. The subheadline in the Freep today, and unfortunately with all four teams stagnant at best and declining at worst, there may be no end in sight. And, you know, I hadn't really considered it. Each season that comes by, you know, we talk about where the Tigers are, and we'll talk about their place in the American right. League Central. And we'll talk about the Pistons taking big steps forward, last year making the playoffs, even though they got swept by the Cavs in round one. This year, they take another step forward. You yourself, Jim Kushlin, said that you would not be surprised and kind of expect the Pistons to advance from the bottom half of the playoff, the eight playoff teams, into the top half and being one of the top four, maybe at number four, and maybe even getting a home court advantage for the first round of the playoff.
Showing once again, by the way, if you're basing your betting on my prognostications, always bet opposite.
The Lions, who made the playoffs now for the second time in 3 years, that's positive, but finished the season on a four-game losing streak once they got up against better competition, that's negative. And then the Red Wings, having a lot of young talent, but not necessarily being competitive for, you know, championship levels now.
And are in danger now of missing the playoffs for the first time in quite literally a quarter century.
Wow. And so when you think about, you know, each season that comes by, we talk about those things mostly, a little bit less on the Red Wings. Just not, you know, I'm not a hockey first guy. I'm a hockey fourth guy. It gets about fourth place on my attention list. In fact, sometimes for me, I'm a hockey sixth guy, depending on what's going on in golf at the moment and what's going on in MMA or boxing.
So, and don't feel the need to apologize. Mike Miller, he's got Face Off the Hockey Show a little later, so he's got you covered.
He does indeed, and Mike does such an outstanding job of that, and that's great. So But let's talk about this. And I want to read. I don't usually read long-form articles on the radio. You can read them for yourself, but I will quote from several sections of an article like this one from the Detroit Free Press. For the purposes of asking you, is he right? Or is Brian at the Detroit Free Press right? And then secondly, which of these four franchises in the D is the most likely to snap out of this and win a championship first? So, again, quoting from today's Detroit Free Press. If you're in a good mood, hit the back button now. For most people younger than 40, you don't remember Detroit sports being in a worse era than this. Normally, with the Detroit Lions making their exit from the NFL season, this time a 26-6 wildcard loss at the hands of the Seahawks, fans had the luxury of turning to their hockey and their basketball teams. At the very least, Detroit fans can count on down the days until spring training, when the boys of summer begin warming up the bats for the long baseball season ahead. There's just one problem. Well, actually, there are many problems. Detroit's major professional sports teams haven't won a championship since the 2008 Red Wings. That's 9 years since the last title. The longest drought for the Motor City since a 15-year stretch from 1968 to 83, snapped when the Michigan Panthers captured the first USFL championship. And by the way, I freaking loved that.
Yes.
I loved it. I miss it. I wish it was existed right now. And as strong of a conservative as I am, and glad that Donald Trump is president instead of Hillary Clinton, I will never forgive Donald Trump for ruining the USFL. I will never forgive him for that. When he was the owner of the New Jersey Generals and tried to push the league from the spring to the fall to compete with the NFL when it had absolutely no chance of doing so, and it ran the league out of business.
And for those, for posterity's sake, for those who don't want to count the USFL, the very next year, 84, was the Tigers championship.
Tigers championship. But that's fair enough. Fair enough. So it's still a long time, that stretch from 68 to 83 or 84, depending on how you look at it. And the worst part, according to Brian at the Free Press now, is that there's no end in sight. And by the way, I want to also say this, Jim, and I'm sure you'll join me in this, in saying to our friends in the D, don't think about jumping off the bridge just yet because of all of this. When you've had 9 years since the last title and you're lamenting what a terrible drought this is, you really got to take stock and put this into perspective. You and I, Jim Cushlin, who were born and raised in Cleveland and are Cleveland sports fans lifelong, we waited 52 years between championships.
Right.
The 64 Browns, and then this past season's Cleveland Cavaliers. We waited 52 years for that drought to end for championships in the city. So when I read in the Freep, Detroit's major professional sports teams haven't won a championship since the 2008 Detroit Red Wings, that's 9 years since the last title, as if that's some, you know, incredibly painful thing. Part of me wants to stand up and say KMA. I don't even want to hear it.
Interestingly, I feel the need, looking at it this way, I don't even need to go to my CLE angle. I almost want to hear from some old school Detroit fans on this one. Was that 68 through 84 block even worse? Because I was looking into some of that. I'll get to that in a minute.
But how? You know, let's get there now before I get into all of these individual teams, because you're talking about 68 to 84 being a 16-year stretch.
Right.
You know, if you're not counting the 15 by going to the Panthers in 83. So 16 years, in what way could that be worse? Oh, you mean worse than now, than
yes.
The 9 years now?
Yes.
I thought you were saying worse than
during this hour on this topic, I want to hear from those old school Detroit fans who remember that time and see if that one was worse than this one.
First of all, my gut would tell me, yeah, it is, because it's 6 years longer. It's 15 to 9, right? We're talking about a 9-year drought now,
right,
since 2008. And it's certain to be, you know, at least 9, because, you know, the Pistons aren't winning the NBA championship this year. And the Lions obviously are out of it. So now we go into the 2017 season with the Tigers and go from there. But at any rate, I think they'll say yes, but it will be interesting just to get their perspectives on it. And Jim, again, not the pessimist in me. What am I trying to say? The what in me? The masochist in me? Maybe because I've got that attachment to self-loathing and remembrances of pain as a Cleveland area fan for 52 years of futility. I look at that one from a 68 to 84 and I say, KMA, you're talking 15 years between titles. I mean, that's your kid going from, you know, kindergarten to college. Mm-hmm. Big deal. What we're talking about, people went generations of life to death. generations. I mean, seriously, we're talking about people. I mean, I was born in 67, 3 years after that championship, and I made it to near Social Security age before they won another one. And I'm pushing up onto Social Security age in a few more short years. So think about that for a moment. We're talking about people have had lifetimes go by, not just, a 15-year stretch. I mean, I've been on the radio for 5 years longer than that, for crying out loud. So let's continue in the piece here. And this isn't to compare misery between cities. That story has been done and will continue to be done. As a matter of fact, here we go. In the article, a little bit later on in the Detroit Free Press, they talk about four sport cities that have had far longer waits for championships than what the Pistons, the city of Detroit is going through right now, and what the older fans you're talking about, Jim, went through from 68 to 84. Specifically, you look at the cities of Minneapolis, St. Paul, they got four teams, and you look at Washington, D.C., they now have four teams with the Nationals. They didn't for all of this time, but they do now. And they haven't had championships for a quarter century, 26 years. Now, I'm trying to find that piece of this story, and I can't seem to find it at the moment. Oh, here it is. Yeah. First of all, the nine-year slump is nothing compared with some other cities out there. Fellow four-sport cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Washington, D.C., haven't won a major championship in 26 years. So that's one over a quarter century. Three sports cities, Toronto and Atlanta, have waited more than two decades as well. And the only reason Cleveland isn't on this list anymore is because LeBron and the boys came back from down 3-1 just this past June, or else we'd be talking five decades of futility for three sports city Cleveland. So just want to point that out, that what we are talking about here is minuscule compared to some other cities' long suffering. However, and this is where we have to get extraordinarily complimentary, that Detroit has put such competitive teams out in each of those sports for so many decades that a nine-year dry spell really feels bad. It really does hurt. In other words, you can kind of get used to your misery if your misery lasts long enough, and I think Cleveland fans endured that for five decades. But if you're not used to misery because you're getting championships in one of your sports in a relatively routine fashion, relatively frequently, at least one of those teams is at the top of their sport, then 9 years go by and none of them are, you can see why that's a little bit hard to take. And when you go back to that 68 to 84 stretch of 16 years, that's a little bit hard to take. But that's just a tribute to the four franchises as a whole.
Yeah.
A little bit less so, I guess, with the Lions, since they're the ones who haven't had one since 57.
They beat the Browns.
Thank you. But you have had championships. So now I want to go back to quoting from the article. Let's start with our two teams in action now. Entering tonight's games, the Detroit Pistons at 18-22 and the Red Wings at 17-18-6 are in last place in their respective divisions. The young Pistons were poised to take the next step this season, a la Jim Cushman's prediction, the next step from the bottom of the playoff pack to at least the middle of the playoff pack and at least maybe the four seed. Behind the pick and roll core of Reggie Jackson and Andre Drummond. But they have slumped because of a myriad of issues, starting with Jackson's preseason knee injury. They haven't won more than three consecutive games all season. They have chemistry issues. They're struggling on defense of late, and they're on a daunting road trip that could put them in a deeper hole as the All-Star break approaches next month. We then have the Red Wings, the team that Detroit sports fans could depend on the last 25 years to contend for Stanley Cups. They stink too, writes the Detroit Free Press. The team leader in goals, Anthony Mantha, with 11, started the season in the AHL. They rank outside the NHL's top 20 in goals against, 2.9 a game. Almost everybody is injured or has been injured this season. The team hasn't scored a power play goal on the road since October. That's right, October. In short, both teams are headed nowhere, and it might cost the Red Wings their celebrated 25-season playoff streak. At least both teams get a new arena next season, right? That brings us to the Detroit Tigers. To be fair, the roster sell-off expected by some people, including general manager Al Avila, in his own cryptic way, hasn't happened yet. So it looks like the team will enter the season with many of its stars, such as Miguel Cabrera, Justin Verlander, Victor Martinez, and J.D. Martinez, as well as young up-and-coming players such as Michael Fulmer and Nick Castellanos. That gives the Tigers the best shot of the four teams for now to win the city's next championship. But at the same time, reality is setting in on this group. They haven't won a postseason game in 3 years. The pitching was a mess last season and is uncertain at best for the coming season. The bullpen is a perpetual nightmare. Key injuries seemingly derail their momentum every year. Their stars aren't getting any younger. Management is done signing big-name players to big-name contracts, or at least it says it is. And the division is getting more and more challenging with the Kansas City Royals and Cleveland Indians recently contending for titles. Simply put, the Tigers' chances of winning the World Series aren't all that close to what they were in 2012 and 2013, when their rotation was full of Cy Young candidates and the lineup was potent from top to bottom. They'll need to rely on a few overachieving performances, a little injury luck, and a red-hot September-October run to catapult to championship success, which basically places them among a group of 15 to 20 MLB teams, in all honesty. And finally, says the Detroit Free Press about the recent run of futility for Detroit franchises and championships. That leaves Detroit sports fans with the Lions, the franchise that has only won one playoff game since gas cost. Oh, I didn't get this one. The other day when we were running down the Greenberg was running down the list of things that have happened.
I thought exactly the same thing you were thinking when I first read that.
Since the Lions last won their playoff game 25 years ago, it was 25 years ago on January 5th to the day, and they were running through all of the presidential administrations, the franchises that did not exist then that exist now, and all of these other milestones, you know, and landmarks. How about this one? Gas, the last time the Lions won a playoff game, cost 26 cents a gallon. Is that right? Is that real?
That feels a little low, but that, I do know it was way under a dollar in the early 90s.
I'll go there with you. No, come on, Brian. I'm going to have to call him out on this. We're gonna have to call Brian Manzullo of the Free Press out on this. Jimmy, I was in 93. I was a junior in, what am I talking about? Junior in nothing. 93, I was teaching. I was teaching and coaching. I was 3 years out of college. I was going in the wrong direction there. I was 3 years out of college. I drove, and I wasn't paying 26 cents a gallon. Sorry, brah. That didn't happen. Was I paying a dollar a gallon? Maybe. I still want to say $1.15, maybe. I remember as a child in the late 1970s and early 1980s, my dad going up and filling up the tank back when somebody still filled it up for you, and it was 89 cents a gallon. But no 26 cents a gallon. I think we got some hyperbole, a little bit of exaggeration for effect going on here by the Free Press. I don't mean to dwell on that too much, but nah, I'm going to have to call BS on that one. But it suffice it to say, it has been a very, very long time since the Lions have last won a playoff game, gas prices notwithstanding. So work with me here. Yes, they made the postseason last year, or this year, but their 9-7 record was propped up by improbable fourth quarter comebacks against bad teams. They went 0-5 against playoff contenders during the regular season and got shellacked when they played a sixth in the NFC wildcard round. Let's face it, they're still quite a ways away from a Super Bowl. I think that was the exact same terminology Jim Caldwell used, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Quite a ways away. So it's true. Life is tough. Continues the Detroit Free Press for Detroit sports fans these days. But there are reasons for optimism. First of all, a 9-year slump is nothing, as I pointed out, compared with some other cities out there. Minneapolis, St. Paul, Washington, D.C., it's been 26 years. Toronto and Atlanta, three sports cities, have been two decades, too. The other thing to remember is the reason that most of us watch sports in the first place. Sports aren't scripted. Things change. The unexpected happens all the time. Every year, there are surprise teams that make runs or leave our heads spinning. Maybe the Tigers finally get a few breaks. Maybe second-year GM Bob Quinn is the real deal and he quickly builds the Lions into a team that can beat playoff contenders. Perhaps the Pistons' 2016-17 season is just a blip in a trajectory toward the NBA's elite. For now, though, Detroit sports fans will have to trudge on. This is what we've been doing the whole time, right? Trudging on. That's Brian Manzullo of the Detroit Free Press, who ends his soliloquy of sadness. Ooh, I like what I just did there.
Nice.
I don't want to break my own arm as I pat myself on the back. If Cleveland has the factory of sadness, Detroit's overall sports scene right now, especially when artfully explained as he just did, it's the soliloquy of sadness. He ends that soliloquy with this poll question on Twitter at the Free Sports Twitter feed, which is at Free Sports. And we'll have to retweet this too, Jimmy. With no team seemingly close, which Detroit sports team will win a championship next? Will it be those playoff achieving Lions of two of the last 3 years? Will it be those Tigers teams that were World Series championship contenders as recently as 2013? Will it be the Red Wings who hold the last championship in the city back in 2008? Or will it be the Pistons poised to actually make that jump from last year to this year that everybody expected but is off to a slow start? Who will be the next Detroit team to win a championship? And Jim Kushlin, I'm going to give you the pleasure of answering first, but not yet, because we want to take time out here and get a sports center, open up the phone lines to callers, 866-240-1065. If you're a fan of the teams in the D here in Toledo, or if you're listening in Southeast Michigan, wherever you are, which of those four teams is most likely to end the 9-year drought and counting? Is it the Lions, the Tigers, the Red Wings, or the Pistons? Let's kick that around together. Coming up right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
Be part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 106.5, The Ticket.
Yeah, that's the number to call to answer the big question of the afternoon. Who is it going to be that will snap the streak? Which Detroit team will snap the drought? Really great piece. Congrats and thank you to the Detroit Free Press for the very interesting topic of discussion this afternoon. The Free, running down, if you just turned the radio on and you just got out of work and got in the car and what have you, Free Press wrote a column today talking about the drought. It'll be 9 years now, and now that it's 2017, it is 9 years, since the last Detroit Pro Sports Championship. And that would, of course, be the 08 Red Wings. The question is this the worst stretch for Detroit sports in history? It's certainly the worst in recent memory. They even reference in the article the 15-year stretch from 1968 to 1983, which was snapped only by the Michigan Panthers of the USFL. Kushlin doesn't like that idea, so Kushlin's calling it a 16-year run from 68 to 84, because that was when the Tigers won the World Series, was in 84. So that was a 16-year run. Now it's a 9-year drought since there's a championship, and we're talking about whether or not this is, you know, the worst in recent memory, and most importantly, which of these franchises, you know, Jim, the truth about it is, it's not just the championship drought, as they point out in the article. It's not like, oh, man, the Tigers lost in the playoffs this year, and the Lions lost in the NFC Championship game, and you know, the Red Wings lost in the conference finals, and the Pistons, lost on a buzzer beater in Game 7 of the, you know, of the Western or in the, of the Eastern Conference Finals. It's not like they're all close. The point of the article was they all suck, at least to a varying degree of suckitude. When you look at the Red Wings, they're on the verge of potential this year not even making the playoffs for the first time in 25 years. The Pistons have the worst record in their division and the fourth worst, I think, in the conference. The Lions, again, are just kind of a pseudo-good team because they beat a whole bunch of non-playoff teams this season and lost to all of the playoff teams, including in the playoffs. So they're kind of a bit of a, I don't want to say a fraud. How about a mirage?
There you go. I think that's a better word.
Yeah, just to be fair to them. And then the Tigers are, well, he explained and the Free Press explained, they're getting older, their stars are, and their pitching is always a big, great big giant question mark, and they can't decide if they're buyers or sellers or whatnot. There was supposed to be a big sell-off that never happened, but there was also no big purchases of free agents to come in and steady the ship. So they're just kind of a big team in flux right now.
Yeah.
In a division, by the way, that is responsible for the last two American League World Series teams.
Three.
The Royals and the Indians.
Actually, it's three. Remember, the Royals 3 years lost in a row. That first World Series.
Yeah, 3 years in a row. But, I mean, you know, but you know, two teams in the last 3 years.
You're talking to you. Gotcha.
Right, two teams, I mean, I meant to say. The two teams that made the last three World Series are also in their division, so it means it's a tough division. So the question then becomes, which of these four teams is going to be the one to snap the drought? And, Jim, I'm going to put that question to you first.
Okay.
I'm going to put it to every caller, every listener right now, I should say. Become a caller at 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065, and answer it. Don't just say which team, but this is the real X factor, Jim, in how many years.
Mm.
When you decide who's going to be the next to do it, is it going to take them a year? Are they a year away from being a championship team? Are they 5 years away? Will this 9-year drought become 12? Will it become 15? Will it become 20? How close is any of these teams to actually winning the first championship for the D since 2008?
Right now, when thinking of that question, for me, I go with the Tigers right now, and here's why. The Lions, though they made the playoffs last two of the last 3 years, as Brian Manzulla pointed out, and we've kind of already discussed, they still need various pieces to not just, because it's not about making the playoffs. We talked about this on Monday with Justin Rogers of the Detroit News.
That it's not enough anymore.
Exactly. But they have to actually go out and make those personnel moves, and then it actually has to, you know, show up next fall. Whereas the Tigers, despite the various issues that are correctly laid out in there, baseball can be funky sometimes. And if for some reason their bullpen plays a little better, you know, pitches a little better, Zimmerman maybe is closer to his Washington form and stays healthy, then they can hang around a little more. Which is why right now I'm leaning more towards the Tigers, because the Red Wings, for the first time in decades, are clearly in a rebuilding, retooling mode. And quite frankly, the Pistons have the same fate as any other Eastern Conference team, which is, as long as LeBron James is in the conference and healthy, you're not dethroning him for at least a couple of years minimum, right? So right now I lean more towards the Tigers as the closest, but in order for the Tigers to do it based on their roster construction, it has to be this year or 2018 at the worst. And I'm not so sure that's possible, given, among other things, the strength of the couple teams in the Central, which is more the Indians right now than the Royals. A lot of reasons, which we'll get into in baseball preview time next month. The Royals are kind of on their last legs before all those kids hit free agency after this year.
Yeah, their window is closing.
Exactly. And the Indians, you know, may not be closing for a little bit.
I think the Indians is wide open.
Exactly.
I think that window right now is wide open. It has a couple of sticks in it so it doesn't accidentally slip and fall down. One of those sticks holding that window open right now belongs to Edwin Encarnacion. I think absolutely their window is wide open because most of their stars are signed for long-term contracts, at least 3 years, some cases 4 and 5.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So I do think the Tigers are a little bit closer right now, but that could change if the Lions can get some personnel in the spots they need it. You know, another guy in the secondary, somebody on the pass rush, a running back. They do those things and start showing on the field, then I would put the Lions a little bit ahead of the Tigers. But I'm not even really thinking of the Pistons or the Red Wings right now. And quite frankly, for either the Lions or the Tigers, if it doesn't happen in the next 1, 2, or 3 years, then yeah, you're probably looking at maybe 2020 at this point.
So no, you don't get to do that. You don't get to say if it doesn't happen now, it's going to wait until X. You got to pick one. When will the next team, and you say Tigers, when will they end the drought? Right now the drought is 9 years, looking at 2017. How many years will it be before they are having a parade in downtown Detroit?
Well, if it's the Tigers, then it has to be in the next year or two, or it ain't happening at all.
So you think the Tigers win by 2019?
Yeah.
Since we're going into, I'm sorry, 2018. We're going into the 2017 season, so it's either the 2017 Tigers or the 2018 Tigers to have the next parade. Now, but again, you said either it's happening now or it ain't happening at all. You don't get that. You keep wanting to ride that fence. You're going to have splinters in your ace. You got to pick. Is it going to happen in 2017 or 18? And if you say no, then you still haven't answered the question, when is it going to happen? Just give me an actual year. This is the year the next parade is scheduled in Detroit.
2020.
And it will be the Tigers.
If I'm going that long.
That wasn't a statement. That was my question.
Right.
You said you think the Tigers are the closest, and it would be 2020. And what's weird, Jim, is I think you're defeating your own argument because that's only 3 years away. This is 2017 season. Now, you're saying that if the Tigers don't win it now, it's going to be a long time. Because they're going to have to rebuild and retool. Remember,
right.
Their farm system is junk. They got nothing left because of all of the deals that they made in the last few years.
Yeah,
it's a very, very lean, thin farm system that's going to take some time to build. I agree with you that if they don't win it right away in 2017 or 2018, it's going to be a while. But you're saying they're going to turn it all around and be ready to win it the next year? I mean, if you don't win it in 18, then they're going to take 1 year of rebuilding, which is 19, and then be a championship team in 2020. I think that's really a mixed message you're sending there. What are you really saying?
What I'm really saying is I don't think any of them are going to win before 2020. That's what I'm really trying to say here.
But the team that you say that is going to win is the Tigers, and are you saying it's going to be 2020 or it's going to be 2025 or 2023? look at a realistic timetable for a turnaround based on all things, including what will be the age of Miguel Cabrera in 2020,
right.
What will be the age of Justin Verlander, what will be the age of Grandpa Martinez, talking about Victor, not JD. You see what I'm saying? So that's the reason I'm asking you to look deep into this, and I want the callers to, too, at 866-240-1065. So you don't think they will win the championship in 2017 or 18? You've already said that. So then the question is, do you still say Tigers of the four? And if you do, give me a year. Are you staying with 2020 and that they're gonna go through the failure of this year and next and then only have 2019 to retool and then they're going to be a championship team in 2020? Is that what you're saying?
I guess when you say it back to me like that, then no, that's not what I'm trying to say. I
think, you know what I think, Jim? I don't think you realized that the years have crept up on us and how close 2020 really is.
That's a good point, too.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I mean, if we talked about this last year or the year before when you and I started doing this show together, you know, it might have, you know, 2020 seemed like it was far off, but damn it, that's only 3 years away now.
That's true.
So you can't say if it's not immediate, it'll be something way down the road like 2020. No. 2020 ain't way down the road anymore.
That's true.
2023 is down the road a bit. Now you're talking 6 years out. So in which case you'd be talking about a 15-year drought between titles.
Yeah, I guess I would be.
I just picked that 2020 sure. out of a hat. You don't have to go with it.
Right. And I think it's an interesting question to try to answer because I don't think there's really any good answers. Again, because unless the Lions can get some of the personnel I was speaking of, then they're going to be stuck in this, well, we're kind of good enough to make the playoffs, but that's about it mode that they're in right now.
Yeah.
Tigers, basically their window, what's left of it is this year and next year. And then even with Cabrera still signed beyond that, among a few others, it's probably downhill after that. The Pistons, like any other team in the East, really, for the next 3, 4, 5 years, have no chance unless a certain guy named LeBron is, A, no longer playing in the East or he's injured.
Yeah.
And the Red Wings are actually, and this is the stark contrast from just a couple seasons, quick seasons ago. The Red Wings are probably in the farthest off position as of this moment.
Which is trippy since they're the last team to win one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
To me, the question that's easier to answer, the one that I, last segment we started talking about this, that I want to hear from some older Detroit fans who may remember the 68 through 83/84 block. I feel that question is easier to answer. This block of time is not the worst. That 68 through 83 block was the worst, and I'll explain why. Right in the current block, though, as we know, nobody's won a championship. Tigers did win the pennant in 2012. The Red Wings, after the 08 win, lost in a rematch the very next year in 09. So, in other words, you had two Detroit teams in this span that at least played in the championship round.
Fair enough.
That was nowhere close to the case, 68 through 83. The Tigers only had one playoff appearance. They got crushed by the Reggie Jackson Catfish Hunter A's in 72. The Pistons had four playoff appearances, and when they weren't in the playoffs, they were literally a pit stop. When you got to the Detroit Pistons, your first goal was to get out of Detroit, but they never made it past what then was round one. The Lions made three playoff appearances in that block of time, also lost in round one every time. And this is probably the darkest period so far in all the Red Wings history was in this block of time. They made the playoffs three times, were a bad team the rest, and in those three times they made it, lost in the first round every time.
So, that's a really good analysis.
In addition to that older block being longer than the current one.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Although, like you said, it would take some older fans to really talk about how they felt during 68 to 84. That's very true. You make some very good points because there have been some near misses, if you will, in this current span of 2008 until now. So, to summarize, you're saying Tigers will be the one to break it, and it will be in what year?
2018.
So you think they're going to do it in two seasons, within the next two seasons?
Yep.
All right, very good. And that's something that Mike Ilitch, of course, if he's still able to be there to witness it, is that's been his goal along. It's why he has spent and overspent and really sold out the future for current championship runs in the last couple of years or last few years. There's no doubt about that. All right, Jim, do we have Eric in Toledo still on the line?
Yes,
I don't have a look at my screen. So let me get Eric in Toledo on the line. And before I answer the question myself and see what his answer is, Eric, thanks for the time. Who is in the worst shape right now and which team is going to be the next to win it for the city of Detroit?
Well, you guys pretty much nailed the nail on the head with your analysis. I love it. But the Red Wings are in the worst shape. I think I've ever seen them. I'm 25.
Okay.
So I have never seen the Red Wings not in the World Series in my entire life. Granted, those first few years you don't know because you don't care because you don't know what's going on. But I'm not a Red Wings fan. I'm not even a Detroit fan. But being in Toledo, you hear all about Detroit. And so for the Red Wings to be as poor as they're playing right now, just it's a shock. So I think the Red Wings are instantly out. And you guys were right with the Pistons. As long as a guy named LeBron James is still in the East, it's going to be LeBron and whoever he's playing for versus, you know, Toronto, Atlanta, maybe even Boston is creeping up there, I think. So
you could even expand that, in my opinion, as long as LeBron is still in the league,
you're
not winning it, and here's why. LeBron is never leaving the East, in my view, which you just pointed out. They're not going to get by him. But if he did late in his career, it would just be to have fun and play with his best friends. He would go to the West somewhere and play with Chris Paul and bring, Carmelo or somebody over, and they'd have like an aging dream team that would probably still have enough to stop anybody from winning in the finals. Even if, you know, if his departure from the East to the West opened the door for the Pistons to be the team in the East, they probably still couldn't beat him. So as long as he's active, and he just turned 32 or one, last
32.
Month. 32. So he's probably still going to be active for another 7 or 8 years, in my view. He's probably never leaving the East, but even if he's in the league at all, you're not beating him.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying.
Yeah.
And, again, I'm not a Detroit fan, but I'm a Cleveland Indians fan, so I watch the Tigers. All my friends are Tigers fans.
Right.
And you're right. They have really depleted their entire farm system. There's no one left in the cupboard for them to go to. And the guys that they do have, they're getting older. Miguel Cabrera is not hitting where he was hitting 2 or 3 years ago. Justin Verlander is not the 15, 16, 17, 18 win guy he was a few years ago. Their bullpen has always been a problem. And my team, if I'm being objective, is going to be the Lions. The Lions have fewer pieces that they need than the Tigers do, than the Pistons do, and than the Red Wings do. The Lions need a running back. Zach Zenner, as good as he has been for those little 3-4 yard punches, is not that breakaway, I'm going to juke you move guy. They need to get a guy that can do it all.
Yeah, they need to hit a home run on a pick, whether it's an early round pick like Elliott, or an early pick, I should say, in the first round like Elliott was, or Le'Veon Bell out of Michigan State was for the Steelers, or they find, you know, gold somewhere in the middle round, or they sign somebody, you know, a free agent. They need to hit a home run on that, and that means by finding a home run hitter, because you're right, Zenner is not a home run guy. He's not going to be that game breaker. But once they find him,
warning track power.
That's well said. Once they find that guy and they find a number one receiver, and no disrespect to Golden Tate, who has done everything and more that he can. He's not, you know, he's not an Antonio Brown, Odell Beckham, Dez Bryant, blah, blah, blah type of guy. Once they get those pieces and become more explosive, I'll tell you what, you make a hell of a point. No league is more built for worst to first faster than the National Football League is.
Correct.
No lotteries, none of that crap. If you suck, you just get a whole bunch of high picks. And, of course, with free agency and everybody having to play by the same salary cap rules and so on, you can truly, you know, turn it around in a very, very short or in very short order if you'd make the right moves in the personnel department in the NFL. And that's a really good argument you make for the Lions.
Right. And like you said, they get a home run hit right off the bat with a good running back. And give someone like Matthew Stafford, I heard earlier in the year, has he surpassed Aaron Rodgers as the guy in the NFC North? And I started laughing a little bit because he's a good quarterback, but he's always got his flaws. You know, Aaron Rodgers certainly has his flaws, obviously early in the year, but Matthew Stafford hasn't always had that receiver. He was so used to going to Megatron, Calvin Johnson.
Yeah.
Now he's had to move the ball around, and I think he's gotten better this year. I do too.
And I still laugh at the comparison, especially when you see the run that Rodgers has been on for the last 8 weeks, counting the regular season and the first playoff game. But you make great points. And I got to run there, Eric. Thanks for the call. Jim Cushlin, I was with you on the Tigers. I also was with you on the fact that it happens now or it doesn't happen for a long time, but I'm going much further out than you because of that cupboard issue. When Miguel is done and no longer productive, and Verlander just doesn't have the juice anymore, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, they still have some nice young kids like JD and Fulmer and some others, but they're not a playoff, they're not a World Series contender, and they won't be for at least 8 years if they don't win a championship right now in the next two. They just won't be, because it's going to take that long to rebuild the farm system as far as I can see it. That's a long time. The Pistons, as I said, a much longer time because of the LeBron factor, and you guys were all over it, whether he's in the East or the West. They're not winning him while he's in the league. The Red Wings, again, I think you said rebuilding. That's probably accurate. You're talking about a team that may not even make the playoffs this year, which is going to hurt the franchise credibility-wise. I'll tell you what. I'm going to have to depart from my original thought, which is that you're right, it'll be the Tigers, because I don't think they will win it in 2017 or 18. The Indians are just flat out better, and so are some other teams in the American League, not to mention the National League, to win a World Series, including the really young and potential dynasty in the making called the Chicago Cubs. I might have to switch my vote here, and I'm going to. And I'm going to go with Eric in Toledo. And say the NFL provides you with the best opportunity to go worst to first. Now, no, some teams just can't do it because they're run so poorly, like the Cleveland Browns. But with Bob Quinn running the show, coming from the experience of championship heaven of New England, the way if anybody can build it in short order, it would be the Lions. So I'm going to shift gears, and I'm going to go with what Eric said. And for the year, I'm going to say Lions champions 2020. 3 years from now, they get those pieces and parts, and they become as dangerous as with Matthew Stafford, kind of right in the end, first beginning stages of the end of his prime. Excuse me. That'll be my vote. I know we're out of time. Mike Miller's coming up next with Drive Time. We'll talk about this some more right here on the Extravaganza tomorrow. Have a good one.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.